The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Well, joining me now is Gerard Gilroy of Off the Ball and Elaine Burke, host of the For Tech's Sake podcast for this week's Winners and Sinners. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having us.
Happy Friday of a bank holiday.
I know. Yay. We made it.
Look at these happy faces.
Made it, kids.
Look at these smiles. We're so close to
they
the
said
end.
We'd never make it, but we did.
And people who have made it through the first term almost, or halfway through the first term, this is a major juncture, isn't it, for teachers?
Absolutely. They're
and they're
my
winners. Your
winners. They're my winners this week. We had parent teacher meetings this week. And I was just coming out of it afterwards going, oh my God, I could never do this. I don't know. I'm a child of the 80s. You grew up in the 80s and every night on the grindingly boring TV shows, there was people giving out about the public sector. Ah, the public sector pay. I'm bored snip. And then 20 years later after the crash, like, oh, we're spending too much money on the public sector. And I'm like, and that filtered into discourse where people were like always giving out about the public sector. The people who put our schools together, who build our roads, who keep our streets clean, who nurse us, you know, when we're born and when we die and in between. All that. And I'm like, but these are the people who built our republic and we're always bitching and whining about them. What's going on? How did that happen? And then also, could you do that job? Could you stand in front of a class of snot-nosed junior infants who can't wipe their own arses? And,
or, do you know what we would have called you back in the day, Gerard Gilroy?
Teenagers.
Do you know what I would have called you? A big lick.
Oh.
Licking up to the teachers, Jer. Did you do it as a child and now you're doing it as a parent?
I did not do it as a child. No. I am married to a teacher though, so you know.
I was thinking that.
This is nothing, you know, she's obviously off for the next week, so I better put some groundwork in. But she never listens to anything I do anyway, so never going to hear this. But I just do think that like...
And what was it about the parent-teacher meeting that was sort of enlightening to you about what they do and what they mean to your children and what they mean to wider society is what you're saying?
They're just the best of us, right? Like putting up with people constantly in the media criticising the fact that like, oh, our public sector wage bill is too high. They've got such an amazing standard of living. I'm like, what? We can't even get people to teach in Ireland as opposed to teaching in Dubai. And we never actually say, well done. And also... It has been a long period. There's like, oh, there's holidays coming up and everybody complains about holidays. What am I going to do about my childcare? I'm like, you know, when you, it's holidays the same time every year.
Well, the weird reason why your childcare is an issue is because the state is still built around the idea that someone should be at home watching the kids. That's why your childcare is a problem. It's not the teacher's fault.
Exactly.
They need a break as well. Yeah.
Do you think people begrudge teachers a little bit in this country, Elaine, because their day ends a bit early and because they've got all these holidays?
I think sometimes that's a joke that you might make when you meet one in a pub or something like that. But it's not the sentiment that I think really actually beds down with people. Like, certainly not anyone I've encountered. Like, teachers are fantastic. And I absolutely agree with you, Ger. I would not like to do that job. Like, I get up and talk in front of rooms all the time. The toughest room will always be a younger audience, especially if they're held captive in a school because, like, they've not volunteered to be there to listen to you. Like if you really want to test your skills... And commanding a room, try and do that in a school. And that's what teachers have to do day in, day out.
But they're kind of brilliant at it. I've seen them do this. One, two, three, look at me. One, two, three, quiet from you or something. There's some rhyme. It's definitely not that. But it's been a really long week, folks. So cut me some slack.
You made it. There you go. That's
our
point.
No, I didn't make it. I think, though, that sort of public versus private animosity that you talk about there. I do think that came from the crash, didn't it? Because there was this sense in the country that there were some people who were really protected.
Yeah.
And then there was other people, namely the private sector, that bore the brunt of it.
It was definitely an old playbook that was polished off from the 80s when the country was on its uppers. Now it has definitely turned full circle and we are trying to lure people back from... other places to come back and to nurse who train here, they go away. Doctors who train here and they go away. And I do think that like the core of this point is that we haven't fully understood how to make it okay to live and work in our society and serve the state. Like you can't live in our big industrial conurbations and have a reasonable quality of life if you're working for the state, really. Like, you can't afford to buy a house in Dublin if you're on two teacher salaries or a fireman and a nurse's salary. And that's just a bit mad, I think. So, like, that's kind of my little...
Yeah, I think you can have a good quality of life outside of Dublin.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I do think within Dublin, I agree with that idea. I don't know, do you, Elaine, with having a Dublin waiting on those salaries?
Yeah, like, I think it'd be hard no matter where you are, honestly. Like, it's like the house prices are insane everywhere across the country. It's not just in Dublin. And that's why we are exporting teachers. It's why we are exporting nurses. Like, we are really good at exporting exceptional talent in really critical care roles. And, you know, when the apocalypse does come, coders aren't going to help you.
Sorry, did you say the apocalypse is coming?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a bank holiday weekend and I just want positivity here.
The week after next. Don't worry.
I'm actually in a good mood today, would you believe?
Hope isn't a policy, right? Like, we hope that you'll come back. It's like, but that's not actually going to work for us, turns
out. Okay, so Jer's bigging up the teachers. They've earned their break. You are picking women in STEM.
Yes.
As your winners of the week.
Well, I had the privilege of being the MC for the Women in STEM Awards last night, and a lot of teachers were among the nominees and award winners last night, and a lot of projects that were engaging with women in STEM in terms of like primary school level, secondary school level. And I also got to meet the incredible Murphy sisters who won the BT Young Scientists in January this year.
So what did they win with? Remind
people.
So
they won with an app that they designed around helping emergency responders be in contact with people in need with geographic location, precision and communicating messaging and stuff like that. And they'd worked on it so hard. It was actually their second time entering with that project because they'd been developing it for longer than a year. They were, and the three of them together, so it's Kira, Leisha and Saoirse, they're all still in school together. They're like... now second year up to sixth year. One of them was about to do her leave insert. And like, we asked them, would you like to go on stage and talk to the audience? Because, you know, the night was about trying to inspire young women into STEM. And we had some young women there who were very successful already in STEM. And they got on stage in front of this audience, absolutely looking fabulous, dressed to the nines. And their command of the room, their articulation, their confidence, their coolness was unbelievable. I was floored by these. And I was literally thinking, it was like, you could put any one of these three up for presidency tomorrow and they'd probably do pretty well. Like, they were just such an inspiration and it just gives you so much... like,
because no matter how much we talk about women in STEM, how capable women are of working in these areas, they remain vastly underrepresented. I think there's 25% of jobs in the US, STEM jobs, belong to women.
That's going to get worse now with some policies that have been initiated in the US. And that's the thing, diversity, equity, and inclusion has become like a bad word in a lot of areas now. And people are walking back their policies and it seems to be really easy for them to do so, which tells you that it was lip service all along. And it was just so nice to be in a room full of people that was actually going back to the roots of what was so positive about those movements and what you can actually gain from it. And it was gorgeous. It was a genuine big celebration.
Jer, do you think there are still stereotypes out there that are hindering women's progress in this field?
You'd have to say that's true in all aspects of Irish life, wouldn't you? I'm definitely interested in like the facility that those kids had to represent themselves and the trope that we have about the next generation not being able to talk like that. So that's really positive to hear as well. But
and it was probably teachers that worked with those Murphy sisters who brought them to the point where they were winning that Young Scientist. So that's a second big up for teachers here in the room.
And that's the thing, they definitely have great teachers, great science teachers who would help them with the application. And they also, they collaborated with like the HSE and healthcare teams and they collaborated with Garda Síochána on making this app really effective. And they talked about, you know, engaging their stakeholders, which is a hilarious thing to hear from a teenager who worked on a science project for out of school. But like, they really knew what they were talking about. And then I got to speak to their mother as well. And she was so grounded. I didn't realise it was the mother that I was speaking to. And I said, oh, aren't they great? And she was like, yeah, but they're also hard work. And I was like, oh, you must be the mammy. And I think the groundedness of their parents is also a credit to them as well. Like, and being exposed to science early, one of them said that she first came across like a science encyclopedia when she was 8, got fascinated with all that stuff. And then that was the start of what will hopefully be a long and happy lifetime of engaging with science.
But how do we overcome some of those stereotypes, some of those biases that are out there that are stopping these capable young women from working in this area?
I mean, programs where we incentivize people to do this, diversity, equity and inclusion programs. Like, that's the, you know, the answer to all of our problems is investment in education, really. Like,
because we want our women, we want our young girls having an interest in science, because there's potential for the future in there. That's where all of the jobs growth is.
But it's also better health outcomes if women are, there's more women doctors. It's better, it's one of the most obvious things is like having representation of the people who are being treated in the treatment room from the people who are treating the people. Like, and that only comes if you spool it all the way back to early access, which is funding primarily. Role models is great, but funding is more important. Opportunity and access.
Okay, so access, I just need to touch on that, because you wouldn't believe that there's still an issue where all girls' schools don't have access to all of the STEM subjects that should be available to them. That's still a problem.
We shouldn't have all girls' schools, isn't it? We really should.
But that's next week's discussion. Okay, we've got to take a quick break because Ellen Butler is standing by with the news headlines, but lots more after those. And we are moving on to the Sinners. Elaine, you have picked Bob Geldof, not because he was in the Boomtown Rats.
No, I quite like the Boomtown Rats.
But because of what he said this week about running for the presidency. So just remind people what exactly he said.
Yeah, so in the same interview, he said two things. He said if he had stood for the election, he would have walked it. And then he also acknowledged the difficulty that he had encountered in being nominated. So at the he holds two thoughts in his head at the same time, knowing that he couldn't secure the votes from the people that needed to nominate him, but also the belief that he could have secured the votes to win the presidency.
And do you not think that is possible? That you could have somebody that can't get the support of the politicians or the councillors that is necessary to get on the ballot paper, but actually you could have wider public support out there.
I think that level of confidence is misplaced. And I just used it as in my head as a representation of something that I refer to often. Whenever I'm concerned about putting myself forward for something, I remind myself that there's an incompetent but overly confident person who will want to put themselves forward for this, and they will Dunning-Kruger their way to the top if competent people aren't in the way to stop them. So
Dunning-Kruger is where you completely overestimate your competence.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, there's an element of where that study has kind of got its own Dunning-Kruger effect to it, where it's overinflated its estimation of the situation. But as a phrase, it's become this idea that the people who are most confident in their abilities usually lack the competence in those abilities.
Does he lack the competence?
To be president? Come on!
I mean, I would like to have seen him run. Wouldn't it have been interesting to see, like, nobody's emerged unscathed from these elections. Are we,
yes,
are
we I think we can say that. We're going to be careful, but I think we can say
that.
But
in the past, right, no non-politician in the past has emerged unscathed, and it would have been very interesting to see what would have happened. But, like, he couldn't convince Fianna Fáil to give him the election. He couldn't convince any, and it was always like, I'd be bored. I couldn't do it because I'd be bored. That interview a few weeks ago where he was basically, you know, cajoled into saying he really wanted it but couldn't bring himself to, that was so weird. Like, that,
it make up just your mind. Do you want it or do you not want it? Would you love it or would you be bored?
Well,
there's an element
totally
here. Bob Geldof is playing the media game. He's a media personality, and that's
all he's
doing.
Over the media,
that's
with
all he's
these
doing
comments.
The same way with Michael Flatley proposing himself for the presidency. Never had any whisper of a notion of getting a nomination, but got lots of press coverage about it that was very favourable for him. Like, that's all Bob Geldof is doing. And credit to Bob Geldof for doing that. But, like, we need to get smarter about publicising this.
They're both selling tickets at the moment as well, by the way.
Of course.
Do you not need a bit of an ego, though, to put yourself forward, to run in a campaign like this? I think that's part of the game.
But this is the thing, like, ego is kind of a construct, I think. Like, you just need to convince yourself that you have the confidence to do something. And, you know, not necessarily fake it till you make it, but even Beyonce has a stage persona. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you just need to quiet the voice in your head that criticises yourself. And sometimes
the imposter syndrome voice.
But even in a healthy way of just having a critical viewpoint of your own work and output and knowing that you'll never be as good as you want to be because you've got taste and you've got aspirations and you've got ambition. So sometimes you have to balance that with putting yourself forward for things. And, like, ego, I think, can be manufactured in a way.
See, I sometimes find it kind of refreshing to hear somebody like Bob Geldof come out and say, I want this job. I'd be damn good at this job. And what's more, I could have convinced you all to vote me into this job. Should we not celebrate that? That's kind of the American attitude to putting yourself out there. We're Irish and we think, oh my Lord, you've got such massive notions of yourself.
If only he had had the opportunity to do all that today. This is like, oh yeah, and I have a girlfriend. She's just in another city. Like, come on, Bob. You know? Oh, I met her at camp. What camp? You weren't at camp.
The girlfriend never existed. Okay. Your other sinner of the week, Jer, is I think the authorities in Ireland and across Europe who have been very slow and quite incapable, it seems, of dealing with how our young people are accessing adult content online.
Well, it's actually in the wake of the riots this week where there was live streaming of the City West stuff. And people were asking for donations for they were rioting, and there's like, oh, here, support our cause here. And I think that, like, you see the level of organization that's happened this week. I don't know if everybody read the piece in the New Yorker about Daniel Kinahan, right? There's a great piece in the New Yorker at the moment. It's kind of a potted history, and there's not that much new in it for a lot of Irish people who will have followed the story of the rise and fall of the Kinahan Empire over the last 30 years, really. But there was great detail about how they had managed to infiltrate various cartels through technology. And I'm thinking, look at the level of technology that we have at the moment, where you're actually able to totally, you see what Israel are capable of doing when they want to be specific about pagers and Hezbollah. The Interpol or whoever the organization was were able to go in, map the servers of this encrypted messaging service that all the drug dealers were using, and then were live watching those messages come in. And I think almost 1,000 arrests have happened off the back of that. You're telling me that the mainstream, so your Twitters, your X, Twitch, YouTube, can't immediately take down people who are filming criminal activity and soliciting money off the back of it, and then subsequently can't provide all the information to the powers that be to arrest people and actually find out who was involved. Like, the IP addresses of those phones identifies them immediately. You would be able to, if the technology companies were forced to allow you or to make you register your own identity to use X or Twitch or YouTube, a lot of this stuff would dissipate really quickly. The point about the adult industry is, in the UK recently, they've brought in new laws where you have to use photo ID if you want to access adult content, and the world hasn't fallen apart.
Like, it's much stricter age verification tools, basically.
But our identity, like, if you want to have a gambling account, you need to put a passport in or a driving license. It should be the same for social media. And one of my great hopes about Ireland is that our regulator is generally viewed around the world as being quite strong. It makes us a lightning rod for, Trump has talked about us and can't go after our guys. We're free because they're all sitting around and paying for the West Wing or the East Wing or the new ballroom or whatever it is. And you're like, okay, well, actually, we do have some power. We could have some influence in this country. And I just think that what happened this week, like, we need to wake up and understand that we're at a tipping point here where messaging can be flashed around. People are vulnerable, they're easily led, they're lied to, the deep fakes. You combine all that and it's a really dangerous cocktail, I think. But there's an immediate answer, I think. Certainly, it's not going to fix everything. But if I know who you are at the end of your Twitter account and the guards have access to that, it's like, well, that's very interesting.
So I think what you're proposing there, Jer, is that when you look at the UK, if you now want to access an adult account, like an adult content account, you have to put in age verification details.
Yeah,
and that you a photo ID. And so you should not be able to hold one of these accounts without doing that also. And that would allow us to identify who is spreading any of this hate or misinformation online. Is that it?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Why are we not doing that?
I've
heard you talk about this before, Elaine. I think you're kind of against this, aren't you?
Well, I just can raise a lot of counterpoints to all of this, basically. First of all, if you were to create a system where the likes of X is going to be holding the identification materials of a bunch of citizens, you have to put your faith in X to protect that information. I wouldn't be comfortable doing that. myself.
See, I do have that a gambling kind account of, with Paddy Power, and I do trust them, or William Hill.
Yeah.
I think
with gambling, though, you kind of, you know what you're getting yourself in for as well. And
isn't there always the point, though, about, you know, the balancing of objectives
you will,
here?
You will
about
create a target.
The bigger common goods being achieved by doing this.
The common good could be achieved with better moderation. I think this is actually taking an approach that would infringe on civil liberties is probably not the best case scenario when we haven't even tried to make these platforms properly moderate the content that they host and that they profit from. None of them put the right amount of effort into content moderation by any degree or estimation for the level of content that they are meant to moderate.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that, are they? So
no,
by forcing people to
ever
put up
had
their
to.
Identity, by making people have verified accounts.
You talked about robust age verification systems being put in place in the UK. No, they just put a sticky plaster over it and kids can get around these things by holding up, like, or by showing it the avatar from a video game to get past it. Like, they,
but I think traffic,
they will be just,
traffic to those accounts has fallen by a third since those age verification.
I think that was
regs came in.
Some specific types of websites that the traffic went down, but also traffic for VPNs went up. So that's virtual private networks that allow
people were trying
to
find
the location from which. So we don't actually, you have to look at the big picture of the impacts here, and that'll take a wide view and a while to figure out exactly how impactful that was. But for what has happened in the UK, it's been easy to get around. It's not actually been had the effect that they wanted to do. It's made things difficult for regular everyday users who are overage to access things. And also pretty quickly, I believe it was Discord, suffered a data breach and people's personal ID documents were taken in that breach.
Okay, it's too big a risk, Ger.
How do we fix this, though, without taking some risks? And I think that if there's a data breach, like, strong regulation should therefore kick in and the penalties for that data breach should be excessive. Like, if they have to pay $1 billion every time there's a data breach, they're going to find ways to screw
it. They've been fined for data breaches. They've been fined in the billions. Like, it kind of is a slap on the wrist.
So for you, it's really the focus should be on content moderators. You want to just put it on those platforms. You sort it out here.
Well, like, you're all
you
in the
find
media.
This material and you take it off.
Do you think it has been good for the world that there exists a form of media that is completely unregulated?
I don't, right. And I actually think the thing that, for me, I don't see a civil liberties issue with having, like, think of all the data I've already shared with them willingly. The bit where I have something that identifies me as me to use any of the Meta platforms or Google or Twitter. I loved Twitter when it was Twitter. I would be willing to trade that as a trade-off to know that if somebody on Twitter is spreading, you know, the location of the riot where they're going to try and kill somebody, I'd be like, that's a fair trade-off, I think. I don't see it as a civil liberties issue at that level. And maybe that's because I've been so beaten down by everything that's happened up to this point.
Okay. But it might also be that you've never had the risk of having yourself be revealed. Like, there's people who are able to live different lives online than they are able to live in their real life, particularly, say, the LGBTQ community, particularly in areas where they might be oppressed for those kind of
inclinations. That's a fair point, right? In those countries, you'd be treading very carefully whether or not they would have the technology or the inclination to protect those people, obviously. That would be very risky.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break, but lots more from our Winners and Sinners panel after this. You have started watching Task.
Yeah.
Ger.
The hype. These TV series come out. I managed to avoid the whole Last of Us stuff until, like, very recently, and then I was like, oh, I should have watched that.
Do you tend to come to these things late?
Yeah, so
yes, me
the
too.
Last episode of Task has aired this week, and, like, generally my feed is full of, like, oh, this is amazing, and it's going to be worse now because my phone's obviously listening to me. So I don't know what happens in the finale. Please, no spoilers. First three episodes, excellent. Like, proper. It's the guy who made Mayor of Easttown is the showrunner.
Oh, yeah, I liked that. That was with Kate Winslet.
Oh, phew. Yeah.
Yes, I did watch that series. So is it the same sort of sense
Mark
and style?
Ruffalo is in it, and he's excellent. He's like an alcoholic whose wife has died. That all happens in the first episode, too. No spoilers there. Who actually works for the FBI, and he's coming out to do one kind of last case. And it's just a starring role for an Irish actor as one of the baddies as well. So
And one of the cops on his team, that's an Irish actress.
Oh, is she?
Yeah,
she,
I can't think of her name. She's in Saltburn as well. She's fantastic.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So is this a first series? I'm way behind on all of this.
Oh, yeah, first series, yeah. It's all over your Sky platform.
Okay, so that's where do I watch it?
It's HBO, so I presume Sky Atlantic.
Atlantic or Now TV.
Okay, that's my recommendation for the weekend. And I do love Mark Ruffalo.
It's great. It's really, really good.
Oh, you've watched it too?
I haven't gotten too far into it. I'm behind as well, and I know you are behind too. But what I've seen so far, I've really, really enjoyed. And Brad Inglesby, the creator, I think he's kind of said that, like, he's not saying there's going to be a crossover and like that, but he envisages it as being part of like the universe that Mayor of Easttown
down the road.
Kind, yeah. I think he's envisioning it as all being part of the same world that he's built.
Yeah.
So if you liked Mayor of Easttown, like, there's a very, very likely chance.
I still just enjoy a good cop drama, basically.
I know. Yeah.
You know, it goes back to the basics. I still enjoy The Wire. I enjoyed Mayor of Easttown. Like, sign me up. That's what I'll watch.
We're waiting for the end of this season of Blue Lights to go back and watch it all in one go, because I can't watch stuff week to week, but everybody's raving about it.
Blue Lights. Okay, two recommendations. Okay, I'm going to have to...
Three as well. You've two seasons to catch up on
okay,
that.
I have to note all of these down. What about you? What else has been happening in your life this week, Elaine?
I've been having a tech nightmare this week. The tech has turned on me, which is fair enough. I'm always talking crap about it. But I have a motto that there's only two things that you can count on in life, and it's that tech will fail and you will die. And it came back and it came for me this week. I lost an entire podcast that had been recorded. No files at nothing to be recovered, just nothing there. I had to re-record as a monologue, which, oh my God, was awful to do. I really respect broadcasters like yourself who can just speak for a length of time to like no one in the room. Like, being in dialogue is so much easier for this stuff.
It's not guaranteed, to be honest, is it, Chair? I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I can't believe you lose material,
it
Elaine. I mean,
all of us.
I obviously am going to lose material. I am not tech savvy, but you can do it. There's almost no excuse for that.
Well,
but there is, because you said tech will fail and you will die.
But exactly. And that's the thing. And I know this, and like, I should practice this more, because like, you should always have a backup. And we do need to have backups. We do need to have contingency plans. We saw this week the AWS outage, you know, one server region in a network of 38 goes down and so much of the internet is impacted. Now, part of that is monopoly and concentration of power. But it also, like, anytime this stuff happens, it just showcases how we don't have contingency for when these things fail. Like, we do fire drills because we don't want a fire to ever happen. But if one ever does, we need to have a plan to, you know, work beyond that. And it's not just like the evacuation, getting people out safely. It's like your business contingency is also part of that planning. But people don't seem to be doing that around tech.
That I think happen. I'm doing really well if I back up my Google Pictures.
That's about, automatic.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Should be.
We clearly haven't got a clue. All right, look, have a great bank holiday weekend. Jerry Gilroy and Elaine Burke, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
That's our lot for today. My thanks to the team: Alex Russo, Claire Collins, Megan O'Halloran, David O'Connor and Maya Sherwood. Hugo De Silva and Ken Doran were on sound. Don't forget, there'll be full coverage of the presidential election result tomorrow on News Talk, starting at 9 a.m. with Anton Savage, then Shane Coleman, Pat Kenny, and I will be coming live at 7 p.m. from Dublin Castle, and hopefully we will get our result across those hours. Get out and vote if you haven't done so. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. Have a fabulous bank holiday weekend.
The Hard Shoulder with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.